Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hi friends, I hope this finds you in good health and secure. The world being in such turmoil lately, I worry about you guys, okay? Thank you for practicing. The more we practice, the more we're able to quell the tide of violence and the turmoil in Mapo, in the world. It's more than just a disturbance, of course. It's a disturbance at the level of life and death. So only our practice can influence that toward a more life-affirming place. Certainly, we can start with our own lives, right? So this is the motivation for our practice. And as I was saying in the last video, and I've said this many times, you know, there's at least 1,500 videos on this channel. And don't forget the search in the middle of the page next to the About link. You know, you got videos, playlist, some other things, and the About this channel. Not the YouTube search, but the channel search. You may have to scroll it over because sometimes it's you can't see that little magnifying glass, but it's there. And that search will search only within the contents of this channel. That can be very helpful if you're looking for information on the word Dharma, you know, just keywords in there. And you'll get a result set, sometimes a few, sometimes a bunch. But they'll all be videos somehow approaching that topic. It'll either be in the title or the description. Right. That doesn't mean you'll find everything, but it'll help in your search. So you can use this resource. Yeah, you're right. So we've talked a lot, I've talked a lot, about innate, inherent Buddha nature. What do we mean by that? It's not because we practice Buddhism that we have innate, inherent Buddha. That may surprise some of you. It is because of the engine of life. The way, ultimately, Shakyamuni is teaching this universal truth. It's universal because everything that composes the cosmos, not everything identifiable, because that's samsara, but everything that the cosmos is, every phenomena occurs, exists, and extinguishes in exactly the same way. And not only the same way, but of the same stuff. Fundamentally, energy. Energy in various agglomerations, forms, states, conditions, tendencies, because everything's moving. Tendencies don't exist in a moment. They exist from moment to moment. We are all momentum. We are all in momentum. This is why science revolves around time, right? And the shortest possible measure of that time, Max Planck gave to us as an incredibly minute numeric representation. In other words, moments are non-perceivable. They happen so quickly. And in each of those moments, all of the energetic forces, the energetic momentum, or the creation of that momentum, even prior to the momentum, what we call in Buddhism formation from quiescence into form, which is what creates the momentum, otherwise known as karma, is in every single particle phenomena that is in the cosmos. It's innate in everything. So how would it not be innate in us? It's innate in the air, in the sand of the Ganges River, of the trees, of the plants, of your friends, of the rock, of your dog. It's everything, every phenomena is manifest in this way. Now, we humans have an incredibly precious, rare facility to perceive that, to witness it, to experience it, right? That's the sentient mind. It's what we call the sentient mind. Oh, look at that. Unfortunately, because of that engine of life and the way that it functions, our first consciousnesses are so amazed. I mean, you ever look at a baby's face? Right? It's amazed at everything, as it should be, as we should be. In a way, you could say we almost return to that fresh look at everything when we open our Buddha eye, our Gohonzon mind. But because we don't have an amassed experience of that amazing thing, our samsara-ness sets in. And we're so amazed, all we want to do is reach out and touch and grab and identify everything. That's why a baby sticks everything in its mouth. It's not because it's hungry all the time. What does it taste like? What does it feel like? What's it, right? It's just voraciously creating data, database, the database warehouse. And that database warehouse, if I could just collect enough information, I would know me. I would know who I am. And who are you? And are you like me or are you not like me? How do we compare? Oh, you have those things. I don't. I have this thing. You don't. Compare and contrast. Data, 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 data. Tata, gata, dada. Why is that the first sound? Why do you think? So, there was a great professor at UCLA who grew quite popular in the 70s, who used to go on, he wrote many books, he went on book tours, he did speaking engagements anywhere, and he was nicknamed Dr. Love or Dr. Hugs. Some of you may remember him. His name was Leo Buscaglia. And I went online the other day because I happened to remember him. And I picked up 15 quotes from him. And sometimes he used the word God, which I don't want to repeat, because G-O-D is a word that's been so misused and so clouded in magical thinking and so forth. I don't think Buscaglia was an indoctrinated member of those things. And you'll see, I don't want to read all these quotes today, but I'm going to intersperse them in the next few videos because I think Leo may have been a Buddhist without knowing it. But the reason I want to read it isn't to sing the praises of Leo Buscaglia. Sticky mouth, I apologize. But simply to demonstrate that although you and I research, study, and read a lot about, and I certainly talk a lot about, innate Buddha-ness, right? As I started out saying, you don't have to be a Buddhist for that to be true. It simply is. It's just that as Buddhists, we consider it as part of our reality and invoke our Buddha-ness repeatedly, over and over again, so that we become more and more aware that this is the truth, the actual experience of life, living, being, the verb of existence. Yeah? Constantly reinstantiating, albeit with slight influences, modifications, movement in our momentum, we edge along our path and shift it toward more and more life-affirming and fully expressing the life-affirming potential of all our karma. Now, I'm going to read the first one only this time because I think it relates to Devadatta, the daughter of the Dragon King, which in here is called the Naga daughter, Naga King daughter. which we're about to read and complete that chapter, right, this misogyny that finally comes to an end with the Lotus Sutra. Imagine 3,000 years ago, a man making it absolutely essential that all of us understand a woman is no different from a man when it comes to enlightenment. We may have different paths, but we all have the potential. It is innate. And this is the biggest message of Shakyamuni. It's already there. We need to, what? Awaken it. It's sleeping, and it's sleeping because of a very powerful drug. That drug is samsara. So enamored are we, clinging are we, craving are we for the data, for the stuff, for the identity, the ego. The ego is not the true self. We think. See, the ego is the samurai warrior of the self. But the self is in there, the real self is in there quietly sleeping because of samsara. So we want to awaken Buddha to get out of bed and obliterate samsara. Not annihilate it, not get rid of it, but in the mind, get it out of the way so we can see true life. So here's the first quote. I know for certain that we never lose the people we love, even to death. Now, I've talked about death. It's in the Buddhism reference book, right? And I've talked about death a lot. A lot of you have had questions. Some of you have had close loved ones pass away during our relationship here in this sangha. And it's a struggle because cultures, religions, we've been raised into this idea of afterlife and heaven or other planets, all sorts of ways. We have reincarnation, right? All those mythologies have been with us for centuries and more than millennia, yeah? Sorry. It's getting cold. The temperature is really changing here in Mississippi, so my sinuses and my body, everything's reacting. So I've talked about that and how our karma, right, moment to moment to moment, is affected and influenced by our environment. That includes our loved ones, our parents, our siblings, our neighbors, our friends, the books we read, the YouTubers we watch, so on and so forth. Every phenomena is an influence on our momentum. Like my little dog, Chloe, who recently passed away. She affected a decade, more than a decade, of my experience of life. Sitting here with me, chanting, right? Her struggles, our deeply emotional moments, all of those have imprinted upon my karma. Now she's gone. She didn't go anywhere. She is extinct. But the influences of her karma on mine continue. How could they not? Because I'm here. That karma is still replicating moment to moment to moment to moment. Although with time, because it's not re-imprinted, right? It's diminishing. It's being replaced. It's being modified. It's being changed. That's why when we remember things, we often remember them a little bit or a lot different than they actually happened. That's why memory is kind of it's a muddy thing. It's a recollection of experience, and that changes over time until it may almost completely go away. You remember when that thing happened? Oh, gosh, I'd long forgotten about that, right? You hear these words all the time. So here's what Leo Buscaglia says, and I find it so close to Buddhist thinking without the rhetoric. And the reason I bring it up is because we know this innately. How else would Buddhism and our Buddhahood be innate if it didn't express itself in other ways completely outside of Buddhism? So listen carefully. I know for certain, he says, that we never lose the people we love. Well, I don't know about never. He's not a Buddhist. even to death. They continue to participate in every act, thought, and decision we make. Their love leaves an indelible imprint in our memories. Isn't he kind of talking about karma there? We find comfort in knowing that our lives have been enriched by having shared their love. Now you can see why he's called Dr. Love sometimes, right? But I thought that was a fascinating quote. And I think I'll read the second one because it's kind of related. But that was specifically how people imprint on our experience. It's a very Buddhist thing to say. It's not a Buddhist statement. But can you see how his Buddha is innate? He doesn't even know it, but he's speaking from it. Don't you think? Listen to this. Too often we underestimate the power of a touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. Ooh. Seemed a little bit mimetic at first, but when it said, with that little smile or that act of caring, you can turn a life around. That's very profound, isn't it? That's all I'm going to read of that today. Don't worry. This isn't the Leo Buscaglio Memoriam Show. I just wanted to demonstrate that what we learn through Shakyamuni and through Nichiren and Tendai and all of these great bodhisattvas of Buddhism, it's based on actual experience. It's not some mythical, magical thinking. It's not a proposed idea. It's a keen observation. And that tool, that desire to observe deeply the experience of life, it's not unique to Buddhism. But Shakyamuni was able to, over 50 years of teaching, formalize it, dig it, not just him, Nagarjuna, Vasubandhu, the Skandhas, all of these different scholars over the centuries, the millennia. By reading Shakyamuni's stories, has been able to glean from them, and teach themselves deeply the meaning of these stories. And isn't this what we're all trying to do? Hone our idea, because we are samsaric beings. And you can look at that as a fallacy or a fault, but we can turn it around as Buddhists to our advantage, right? Our earthly samsaric drug can be used to lead us to our enlightenment. Nichiren says this, yeah? So, let's finish this chapter, and you'll maybe pick up on it as a subtext. We just finished with the verse section, right? At that time, Shariputra spoke to the daughter of the Naga king, saying, "You say that you will soon attain the highest path. This is difficult to believe, first of all, because you're 8 years old, and not least of which, you're a girl. Why is this? The female body is polluted." Right? You have that lunar cycle thing that happens to you where you purge your eggs and you bleed. Ugh, how vile. I can't tell you how many women I've talked to and I've tried to convince them. That's an amazing process, a life-giving process. So precious. You should be proud of it. You should have a monthly celebration. It means that you could be involved in harboring, in allowing, in creating an environment for a new entity of karma to manifest with you, within you. How incredible. But it wasn't viewed that way. still isn't in many sectors, yeah? The female body is polluted. It is not a fit vessel for the Dharma. How can you attain highest enlightenment? That's pretty damning. For an 8-year-old especially, but for women in general. This is why I said, ladies, pay attention to this. This is a very important chapter in your Buddhist practice, really. The Buddha path is long. One can only attain it after diligently carrying out severe practices and completely practicing the perfections over immeasurable kalpas. There's that time thing, thinking that a woman who is not only polluted but fragile. Moreover, the female body has 5 obstructions. The first is the inability to become a great Brahma. You can never reach the heights of understanding that a man can. Ouch, oh, ow, oh, I can feel the sting. The second is the inability to become sakra, another deification of a personage of an ability of the mind, in this case, the male mind, evidently. The third is the inability to become Mara, right? The influence and guardian of samsara, really, the earth, earthly beings. And the fourth is the inability to become a universal monarch. You can never be a leader. How could you be a leader when every month you go through this trauma? Right? I mean, it's that simple. It's pretty basic ignorance. Born on fear, I would submit to you. I think it's pretty scary to men in general that women can do the birth thing. It's frightening as all get out. So we've got to demonize it, put it down. My gosh, we're going to give her power? What does that mean for us? We're pretty pathetic in comparison to that. The fifth is the inability to become a Buddha. Just take it. You can't be enlightened. How? How can you, with your female body, quickly become a Buddha? How arrogant are you, little girl? Do I have any of you ladies riled up yet? Hold on. Then the daughter of the Naga King presented to the Buddha a jewel worth the great manifold cosmos. And the Buddha accepted it. What do you think that jewel was? Doesn't matter. This is, you know, a story. She's only 8. But the point is that women are no less able to discover and to bequeath, gift, great, amazing things. And in this case, this jewel is compared to the great manifold cosmos. I submit to you, we're talking about a new life. But it's just my opinion. Let's just stay with the manifold cosmos. And Buddha, being Buddha, thank you very much. The daughter of the Naga King spoke to the Bodhisattva Prajnakuta and the noble Shariputra, saying, I offered a jewel and the Bhagavat accepted it. Was that done quickly or not? How long did that take? They answered, saying, it was done extremely quickly. You just handed it to him and he took it. The daughter said, through your transcendent powers, watch me become a Buddha even more quickly than that. Ooh, ultimatum. She's just been totally derided, and yet she's going to honor these gentlemen by demonstrating that there's no great arduous path to becoming a Buddha because it's innate. It's a decision. Now, of course, it takes efforts, but she's making a point. I'm a sentient mind just as much as you are. There is no difference. Then the assembly there all saw the daughter of the Naga King instantly transform into a man. Hold on. Don't let that deter you. Perfect the Bodhisattva practices, go to the Vimala world in the south, sit on a jeweled lotus flower, and attain highest complete enlightenment, become endowed with the 32 marks and 80 excellent characteristics, and expound the true Dharma universally for the sake of all sentient beings in the 10 directions. Then the Bodhisattvas, Kshatriyas, 8 kinds of Devas, Nagas, and so on, humans and non-humans of the Saha world, Samsara, all saw in the distance that the daughter of the Naga King had become a Buddha and was universally teaching the Dharma for the sake of humans and Devas in that assembly. They rejoiced greatly and honored her from afar. Now, this translation is missing something that other translations say. She became a man only briefly in all of the other translations I've read. She was a man only for a moment and then transformed into a Buddha, which brought her back to being a girl. But they avoid that here. And I suspect that's that tendency of the BDK society, teaching Mahayana but hanging on to certain old concepts that they don't really want to let go of. But they can't deny that she became a Buddha. Let's see how this closes. On hearing the Dharma, incalculable numbers of sentient beings became enlightened and attained the stage of non-retrogression. Incalculable numbers of sentient beings received their predictions to the path of the Vimala world, quaked in 6 ways. In the Saha world, 3,000 sentient beings attained the stage of non-retrogression, and the 3,000 sentient beings in whom the thought of enlightenment had awakened received their predictions. The Bodhisattva Prajnakuta, Shariputra, and the entire assembly accepted and believed in silence. Whoa. That must have been quite a moment, right? I know it's a story, but the point being is a sentient mind is a sentient mind. And that subtext is Buddha is innate. Buddha doesn't have a sex or an age. Buddha isn't filthy or clean. It's just clear. It's a mind. A mind does not have genitalia. It has only the ability to witness. And it either witnesses through billions of filters created of karma and influence, 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, blah, 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 blah. Or it sees right past all of that to the absolute nature of life, engine of life, formations, where everything is equal. Equal, the same. It's a process, moment to moment. It's very liberating. Liberating from what? Samsara. The database, the warehouse, the opinions, the possessions, the identity. It's hard to understand what it means to hold that at bay, not destroy it, but to see its usefulness without being attached to it, holding on to it, craving it, just watching it. By doing that, we can consider more intelligently, right? When we watch our children play, we see with clarity the foolishness and the beauty and the potential, good or bad, how you judge that. It's different for everyone. But it requires a parental distance. a sovereign distance over all the parents and children, right? These stages, these ways of seeing the process of life, teacher, parent, sovereign, are three common descriptives we have all the time with Buddhism, yeah? It's part of our practice. And we develop those skills specifically by invoking Buddha. That's what we chant for. We don't chant for a Camaro. We don't chant for anything samsaric. We don't chant for anything. We chant to manifest Buddha. Buddha. Shift mind Buddha-ness. Open Gohonzon mind so my Buddha eye can see, can experience, can be in this moment, this moment, this moment. Open Buddha. Just do it. It's there. See, that's the point. When you chant for something, you're looking outside of yourself. You're not going to find it. Nichiren said, don't look for this Gohonzon anywhere outside of your own flesh and blood body. It's here in your mind. Just invoke Buddha. Single-mindedly, meet Buddha, meet Buddha, the true self, the selfing, the being. Be in the verb. That's how I choose to say it. It sounds simple, but if you've chanted any amount of time, this struggle is very real to you. But if you can, even if you need to force yourself, even if it's the language you're using in your brain, in your mind, be conscious of the language you're repeating to yourself. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. What does that invocation mean? Namu, I'm here, I'm dedicated inculcator of awakeninger. Of Buddha from me. I'm invoking it. I'm instantiating it. Buddha now. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Doing that, you will fuse with your mandala because it will reflect your Bodhisattva mind, the opening, creaking little door. Buddha. Everything changes when that happens, let me tell you. Best of luck in your practice. I hope you got some meaning out of this chapter. We're starting the new one, Perseverance. Gee, I wonder how that relates. All right. I'm done yakking. Enough blah, 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 as I used to say. Keep your practice strong. That's what all these resources are built on. The website, the bookstore, the the free podcast, these free videos, all of it. It's all here to support your practice. To help you savor it. To get rid of doubt. To really, really know that when you chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, you are Buddha. Buddha mind. Buddha witnessing. Buddha experience. Buddha Dharma. All right. Use these resources. Those of you who can make purchases and patrons who simply send donations, you guys are critical to expanding this sangha. But even just liking and subscribing, just a simple click and click helps YouTube, that enlists YouTube to help us grow the Sangha. It's all Bodhisattva work. Propagate. Let's let more people know. The more we let know, the more we share these videos with, the more we start changing, altering the minds of samsarians, the more chance, the more hope, the more influence we have to put at bay the violence, the warring, the avarice, the stupidity, the animality of the world. Make no mistake, every Daimoku you chant is an influence on the population of the world. It's energy. We're all sharing the same energy. But you and I, we affect it. So thank you. Thank you for your practice, and I'll see you in the next one. All right? Bye for now.